This is Justin with a quick note before today's show. If you're listening to these episodes and are enjoying them, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on LinkedIn or at justin@beyondtheuniform.io. I want to know how I can make this show better and how I can better support you. Your advice is very much appreciated. Thanks and enjoy today's episode.
Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 37 with David Cho.
I'm in the beauty industry, right? Like, I think, like, I was like, combat arms, I'm like this, like, ex, like, combat arms officer knows way too much about cosmetics now. You know, I think it's really funny. For me, timing really worked out because when we did start SoCo Glam, I was actually an executive aide to a general officer. Although my time was really sporadic in terms of, like, I could be called to do something at like 11 p.m. But for the most part, I was pretty much in garrison. So I had a lot of time on my hands to kind of research. You know, I took like night classes. You know, I wanted to like research on certain things and like get caught up on it, go out and meet people, you know, network. And so that would be my piece of advice. I mean, when you're still in, I mean, really spend the time to meet people. Figure out what you want to do. I mean, do as much reading as possible, but you got to go out there and talk to people.
The top three reasons to listen to today's episode are: one, startups. David started his company, SoCo Glam, while on active duty in the Army, and continued it while at business school at Columbia. SoCo Glam has been featured in Vogue, The New York Times, The Today Show, and more. And it's all a cosmetics company. This ex-Army officer is running a hit beauty e-commerce company that he started while in the military. It really doesn't get any better than that. Two, co-founder. Most entrepreneurs stress the importance of trust in a co-founding relationship. Well, David co-founded SoCo Glam with his wife. He talks about what that's like, how much of an asset it is to him and his company, and advice to veterans seeking to co-found a company. Three, resiliency. David is a case study in resiliency. He didn't get into West Point on his first try, and he didn't get into Columbia Business School on his first try either, but he kept at it and got what he wanted. And I believe that this factor, this tenacity, is what has made a difference and will continue to make a difference in his success with SoCo Glam and future startups. As always, show notes, including links to relevant websites as well as timestamps for each point of our discussion, can be found at beyondtheuniform.io. So let's dive in to my interview with David Cho.
Well, joining me today from New York is David Cho. David, thanks for joining me on Beyond the Uniform.
No, this is really cool. Thanks for having me.
So for listeners, I wanted to give a quick background. Dave is the co-founder and CEO of a startup called SoCo Glam. That's an e-commerce beauty shop and lifestyle brand with the best selection of Korean beauty products and content. David started out at West Point and served as a combat arms officer for over 8 years. After his transition from the Army, David attended the Columbia Business School, during which he worked at Facebook and as a global account. Worked at Facebook as a global accounts intern. So, David, maybe to start off, how would you explain SoCo Glam and what you guys do?
Thanks for the intro, and thanks for having me. I mean, I'm super passionate about having a dialogue and communicating with other vets and helping them with the transition, because I know I got a lot of help along the way, and happy to dive into any of that later on. But SoCo Glam, I mean, you already said who we are, but you can go to SoCoGlam.com. You can check out our website. That's really where people really know who we are. We started the business 4 years ago out of Korea. So I started the company with my wife, actually. So she's my co-founder, Charlotte Cho. She's kind of really more the face of the company, kind of the face of K-Beauty here in the U.S. She wrote a book that's a national bestseller right now. And so for me, I'm more behind the scenes. But we started the company out of Korea because I was obviously stationed there towards the end of my my service. And Charlotte was actually working there as an expat from Samsung. And we met in Korea, actually, on a blind date, nonetheless. But our hometowns were just like 10 minutes away from each other in California, which is where we both grew up. And every time we fly home for the holidays, you know, people ask us, hey, can you buy me this, buy me that? It'd be a lot of Korean cosmetics. And so we started asking, how can you not get these products online? And so we just, you know, kind of looked into it, and we love the products. You know, I think the cosmetic business is a really exciting business. And so that's kind of how SoCo Glam was born. So yeah, we're SoCoGlam.com, but We do. We also build a lot of content. So we got this another kind of site that we run called The Clog. So it's at theclog.co.
And I'm always curious, you know, especially for people thinking of starting the company, there's that starting point question of, do I go it alone or do I start with someone else? I'm wondering, and I think there's a lot of prominent examples of, you know, married couples who start a company mm-hmm. together. I'm wondering what that's been like being married to your co-founder, and also any advice for someone who's thinking of going down that path of starting a company with a significant other?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I get asked a lot that question because I get this all the time, actually, where people are like, I don't know how you do it. Like, I would like be killing my husband or wife, you know, just like we'd be at each other's throats. And, you know, I would say that, you know, Charlotte and I think we just really had a great foundation in terms of, you know, what we wanted to do. And, you know, I think that it's the same for, let's say you're going into business with your brother, your sister. I mean, it can be a college roommate. I mean, there's so many scenarios where you could be going into business with people that are closest to you. So I think it all applies. I think it's not an easy thing, but if you figure it out, it could be the best thing ever. Because I mean, who knows you better than your wife or your husband, right? And I think like, it's just like, in terms of all of those like kind of weak points that can happen in a co-founder situation, like trust, or do we have complementary skills? Like, you know, how hard is everybody working? I think, you know, some of those really small things, like Charlotte and I, we don't have to worry about. And so, like, I think a piece of advice that I would have for anybody considering going into business with their spouse, or, you know, just a loved one, like a brother or sister and so forth, would be that just a few things. I think what really made us work, and I guess I should caveat by saying that by no means has it been easy. We've been at it for 4 years and we're still working on it. And but we found a way to make it work. And so these are kind of the takeaways I have right now. One is, like, you definitely need to have complementary skill sets. So if you guys are both like really kind of working on the same things, I think there's a lot of points of conflict. So that can be really hard. Luckily for Charlotte and myself, the things that we're both really good at are very different. So we both kind of have our own lanes that we work on, and we don't really cross over too much at all. And the other thing is, like, you just got to have an extreme amount of respect for each other. And that's like a cliche, but let me talk about it in more like technical terms. You know, early on, Charlotte and I knew that, you know, we're going to be working all day on the business. And we kind of set these like rules. We're like, hey, every Friday night, you know, we're going to take off our co-founder hat and we're going to put on the husband and wife hat, and we're going to have husband and wife time. And what we found was that that didn't really work for us, because when you're at dinner, you end up talking about work. When you're out, you're talking about work. You're thinking about work. I mean, you care a lot about the business, so you should be thinking about the business. But when you're in business with your loved one, I think that, you know, you should just embrace it. You shouldn't like kind of ignore that, you know, try not to talk about work. I think what you need to make work is, how do you find a healthy way to communicate the right way to each other? Because obviously sometimes you'll have hard conversations with your co-founder that could also be your, you know, spouse. And so you have to find the right balance of talking to each other with the same amount of respect as co-founders and husband and wife. And once we were really able to realize that, it actually made our life a lot better. So I take this from Jeff Bezos. He says he doesn't really believe in work-life balance, which I think ties into what I'm saying. He says that he believes in work-life harmony. It's kind of cheesy, but I actually get what he's saying, because he says that, you know, if he's a better husband, then he can actually be a better, you know, CEO, and vice versa. So like, as you're better at one thing, it actually makes you better at the other, because work-life balance kind of assumes that you have one more of one but less of the other. And I think it doesn't have to work like that. So that's kind of like my long-winded piece of advice.
That's great. I mean, I as you started to talk about this, I was going to ask about how you put those boundaries and how you, because startups, from my experience, it can be so all consuming. It's hard at times to turn it on or off. And so then I thought with a spouse as a co-founder, it might be even more difficult. But what I like about what you're saying is it's not like in actuality our lives are compartmentalized like that. And it's not like you need to put these brick walls between different facets of who we are and what we like to do. And I also appreciate from your description, it's like, man, it, like, because I think of like with my wife, how hard it was to find someone I was willing to marry. And then on top of that, trying to think of the same process for someone I'm willing to work with. And so it's like, man, if you have someone where you have that trust, you have that communication skill, and you've got that ability to work together in complementary ways, that seems like an extreme advantage.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I think you just nailed it on the head there. That's exactly how we see it. Again, we're still working on it, but yeah, we purposely didn't set boundaries because, I mean, it's going to sound kind of cheesy, but we really just enjoy our time together. We consider our time as co-founders a very special time as husband and wife, and we plan on sharing this with our kids one day, like the stories and maybe even our grandkids about, you know, what we experienced together. We don't consider this like work in other ways. Like, I think it's like this is kind of a part of our life, and we enjoy what we're doing, and we really cherish the fact that we get to share it together.
That's great. And I always like to try and make a job as granular and understandable as possible. And I'm wondering, could you take us through, I know no day is typical or the same, but if there was an average day, what time do you generally start working? What sort of things do you do throughout the day? Paint that picture of what life is like for you running a company.
Yeah, sure. I start my morning every morning at 6. So this is kind of like an old habit from the military, but I like to wake up early, get my PT in. So I do that every day. I usually get into the office around 7:30 or 8, whether I'm checking my email or actually physically coming in. And then from there, I just really have about a good hour of like quiet time, like time that I'm not, you know, being disrupted in the office, for me to just really kind of, I guess a lot of it's like email catch up. So I prioritize my day in that time. And then basically the rest of the day, I'm basically not even in my seat. So I'm out having meetings. We have marketing. We have just to make sure we're all communicating with each other. And a lot of times I'll be out kind of, you know, grabbing lunch with somebody. I always try to kind of spend at least one or a couple of times a week to just go out and meet somebody, try to network and just keep relationships warm, whatnot. And then my afternoons are really kind of a hodgepodge. I think that's my afternoons are where, you know, I have things like this where I'm being interviewed for something, or I'm out kind of talking to folks. Like next week I'll be going up to Columbia Business School and talking to some vets up there. And I usually just like to keep myself really busy and running around for the company. I'm either talking to accountants, lawyers, or, you know, talking to some investors. So it really, like you said, it runs the gamut of what I can be doing. But generally, I'm not in one place for too long.
And what's the lifestyle component like? Are you typically working on weekends? Do you travel a lot? What's kind of the, I know that you've already addressed this thought of work-life balance, but I'm trying to put it in comparison right now for someone maybe on active duty of wondering, if I start a company, what does that look like for my life?
Oh, man. Okay. That's a good question. So for me, and this is just me, I mean, this is just my style, is, you know, I work every weekend, and I would say that my Saturdays and Sundays aren't intense as my Monday through Fridays, just because, you know, a lot of it is like things that, you know, I don't need to bring somebody in to do. And so it's just like, I think for me, I'm just like super laser focused on certain things that we definitely are, you know, it's still a startup. And so I realize the fact that I got to put in the work. So that's just where my mindset is at in terms of like the op tempo, you know. So if you're, you know, if you're currently in active duty and you're considering working in a startup, I mean, you'll read it everywhere, but I'll just reiterate the fact, like, you're going to work as the hardest you ever worked in your life, you know. And I, you know, I also had a deployment, and you know, if you consider, I mean, actual time, like, you know, some people, like I know, are on, we're on shift work when they're deployed. Others are just like on missions all the time. I mean, I would consider that time where you can, if you were deployed, you will relate that you're just extremely busy, extremely exhausted mentally, physically, psychologically. I mean, you're being beat down and you got to get back on that horse. A lot of that, I think, translates to being in a startup. You know, there's really no set work hours. You're just continuously working, sometimes multiple days in a row without sleep. Just depends on the phase. And I think that you should be ready for that. But I also think that's what makes it so dang exciting, because you're actually creating something. You're like building something, you know, and you see the impact that you make. And I think that drives you more and more. And so I've been at this for 4 years, and I'll say that nothing's really let up. Like, you would think that you would, you know, when you raise money, you're going to, things are going to be busy, easier, but you know, Biggie was right. More money, more problems. And I think also when you have more people, you think that, oh, like, I'm going to be able to delegate that. And, you know, I'm going to be able to have more time to, let's say, you know, spend my weekends just traveling or something. But that really isn't the case. And maybe it's different for other companies, but at least my style, like, that's just how I kind of am. In terms of travel, I think it depends on the business. For us, we do go to Korea quite a bit. We go about once a quarter, and we usually stay for about 3 to 4 weeks each time. So we're really spending about a third of the year in Korea. But other than that, I mean, we pretty much stay local here in New York City.
And you started SoCo Glam while you were in the Army. What was that like? And do you have any advice for anyone listening who would like to try and start a company while on active duty?
Yeah. You know, it was actually really great to really start the beginning portions, because I guess it depends on what you're doing. Like, I took company command for about 2 years of an infantry company. And when I was doing that, I didn't have any time to even look into this business. So for me, timing really worked out, because when we did start SoCo Glam, I was actually an executive aide to a general officer. And so although my time was really sporadic in terms of, like, I could be called to do something at like 11 PM, but for the most part, I was pretty much in garrison. So I had a lot of time on my hands to kind of research. You know, I took like night classes. You know, I wanted to like research on certain things and like get caught up on, go out and meet people, you know, network. And so if I had advice for people, is to really spend that time. Like, you don't need to consider, like, really try to get ahead as much as possible, because to any vet, and I talk to a lot of vets, I mentor a few vets. And I think that one thing that I see a lot is, you know, vets, there's some vets, and things are kind of changing, I think, but they kind of expect a handout. They're like, oh, I'm a vet, you know, I've served my time, and, you know, I'm going to get the benefit of the doubt when I apply for a job. There's that. And then there's the other side where they're like, I'm a vet, like, I'm a dumb grunt. Like, I don't know anything. Like, I really need to like work my tail off and figure some things out. I'm highly stressed. And I would say the healthy approach is definitely somewhere in the middle, but more to the right, meaning the former. So considering more that you have to really put in the due diligence. And so that would be my piece of advice. I mean, when you're still in, I mean, really spend the time to meet people, figure out what you want to do. I mean, do as much reading as possible, but you got to go out there and talk to people, because they're going to be the ones that give you like the anecdotal, information that is going to be kind of like more tailored to you. Cause there'll be people who know who you are. You've introduced yourself, or maybe there are people that you confide in and they're going to tell you the truth. That would be my 2 cents.
And, I'm wondering, are there any specific resources you would point someone to if they're thinking of starting a company? It could be podcast or book or, website. Like, what have you found helpful in learning about how to build your own company?
Well, you know, I think veterans, we got a little bit of a leg up on this. I think, and I'll explain why. I think I'm in the beauty industry, right? Like, I think, like, I was a combat arms. I'm like this, like, ex, like, combat arms officer knows way too much about cosmetics now. You know, I think it's really funny. And people, like, when I first started the business, like, all my friends are like kind of making fun. You know, they're like, you know, I wash my face with Ajax, you know, like, I heard it all. And, you know, I think like, I'm in the beauty industry and in the startup, and I think what I really bring to the table is like leadership. And this is something that a lot of companies think about, a lot of people talk about. And to be honest, a lot of companies, when they're small, as a startup, they really just kind of like put to the wayside. And I understand that because a lot of times you need to build a product, you know, you need to build the software, you need to like build the hardware, whatever it is. And I get that. But I think that once you start bringing people into the mix, you start making that first hire, second hire, third hire. I mean, you got to think about leadership because it's all about like people, you know, and I consider people, our team members, like the most important asset. So if you're a veteran out there, you're listening to this, just know that all of that military training, all that leadership training, all that mandatory training that you did, all the different things that you saw from your platoon sergeant, your platoon leader, and so forth, I think that don't take that for granted. So, you know, there's all these great books that I read, you know, when we were in the military, like Good to Great. You know, there's all these great leadership books out there and all these classes you took, and I'm using those things on a daily basis. So that's the first thing I want to say about resources. In terms of applicable startup stuff, I think, like, again, kind of going back to what I was saying before, like, do your homework, you know, like, go out there and don't expect handouts. Go out there and read those books. And just two that I could just name off the bat right now, if you're into startups, would be 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel, which everybody knows about, and Hard Things About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz, which also everybody knows about. I mean, those two books are just great two places to start, and then just start going down the list. In terms of blogs, like, definitely check out the blogs. I read Fred Wilson's blog every day. You know, I read all a bunch of blogs like that just come in. TechCrunch, staying up on tech news. I have my Google News to be totally personalized to me, so I get the news that I want, whether it's e-commerce, beauty, and so forth. And I was even part of a program, was it ACP? You guys have probably all heard of it.
I don't
You
think I know
know,
that one. What's ACP?
American Corporate Partners. I
Oh,
think
that's right. That's
that's.
right. Yeah. That's where they put you in touch with like a mentor. Okay.
So I think I guess my big takeaway here is like there isn't like one good thing. Like there's like golden nuggets. You're gonna read these books and like listen to these podcasts, and you'd be like, oh yeah, that's really great for me to think about. It's like it's reiterating what I've been thinking. It's validating my thoughts, or it's like giving me new ideas, and that's cool. But you got to do it all because like ACP on its own like was okay, but it's like a networking effect. So like all of it put together really was able to give me kind of a good baseline of knowledge, and for me to really just take that and think about like the next like courses of action. Like how am I going to use all this information? And so those are some of your resources that were really helpful for me. But it was really just the aggregate of putting them all together really allowed me to kind of take it to the next level.
What about a question that comes up or a debate that comes up frequently is the value of business school when starting a company? And I understand, you know, that's the route I took, it's the route you took, so obviously biased here. But I'm wondering, you know, leaving the army, I get the sense that you knew that you wanted to focus on your own company. So how did you decide on business school? And in retrospect, how, in what ways has that benefited you? And in what ways has that, if any, hindered you?
So, you know, the way that it all kind of played out was actually pretty funny. So I applied to business school because I actually wanted to stay in the military. So I wanted to go back to West Point and teach. That was actually the plan. So I wanted to, they have a program where they'll send you to get your master's, you'll go back and teach for 3 years. And that was actually the goal all along. I was loving what I was doing in the military, and I was planning on making it a career. And so I applied. And I got into the school I wanted to get into, but I didn't get into the West Point teaching program. And so I was at a crossroads. This is when I was in Korea, I got married that same year. And so I had to make a decision. It just turned out that, you know, I was ready for the next chapter of my life. I always felt that a part of me, and both of my parents are entrepreneurs as well and still are. And it was just like, I always felt like that was a chapter I wanted to tap into. And so applied, got in, and then we basically, like, right around that same time after I put in the application is when really the ideation of, like, SocoClam started to come out. And so it was cool because, like, I was able to really tap into that creative side and the entrepreneurial spirit. And so, you know, that's kind of how it all kind of played out. And so for me, my B school journey kind of changed. So once I knew I wasn't going to be in the military, I already tried to transition myself. So like the advice I gave before, I was doing as much homework as possible. I, you know, I applied for like this, this vet, Google vet program, Google Student Veteran Summit, I think it's called. And so, you know, I looked into everything to kind of see how can I completely optimize my B school experience. And so a lot of my friends, I don't know what it is about the military. It just kind of, you start gravitating towards finance. And so, I just wanted to like see, you know, as the company was growing, we're like, it was really a passion project. That's how it kind of started out. And so I wanted to at least kind of take the opportunity to B school and just like expose myself to as much as possible, which is eventually why I ended up at Facebook, because I also wanted to kind of explore that. And if nothing else, I was able to get so much great experience to be able to bring that right back into the company. And so once I knew like SocoClam was going to really kind of take off, like it would be really great, saw a lot of great traction, I started changing everything towards, okay, all my classes is going to be just for the company. So I took a lot of marketing classes. I took a lot of VC classes and whatnot. And it was cool because I was able to apply the theory or whatever I learned that day. And a lot of times I would see results like that night or the next day or the next week. And I was able to bring that right back to the class or the professor. And I mean, like, it was almost like an incubator situation. Like I was like, my B school experience was a little bit unique in that sense where every step of the way, like B school really helped the company grow, whether it was my professor connecting me to somebody because they really believed in the business, or they were kind of invested because like they were helping me along the way. They're seeing the results. The downside I would say would be, I mean, like, you know, it's a big chunk of time. And sometimes in a startup, you don't have a lot of time. But for me, and I think for any veteran, I mean, when you're making a transition, I mean, I had zero network outside the military, really. I mean, I had nothing in New York City. And so B school for me was a great way for me to kind of jumpstart that side, kind of like the real world, as we call it. And so that was helpful for me. I really don't have any regrets.
A regret I have is that I didn't do what you did in business school. And I feel like, I don't know if this is good advice for any veteran, but I just feel like for myself, if I had, even if the company idea didn't go anywhere, if I had a company idea during business school, it would have made everything so much more three-dimensional, and every class would have felt more practical. And for me, especially coming directly out of the military, everything just seemed like abstract theory, and everything seemed like in a vacuum. But the advantage of your experience is you were able to, I mean, I just imagine, yes, it helped the company, but I can only imagine how much it helped you as a person learn so much more and just suck every ounce of value out of every experience. So I think that's a really good example for the veteran community.
Oh yeah. Some of my learning teammates make fun, or classmates make fun. They're like, you should be paying Columbia Business School because you got way too much out of it.
That is a good accusation to have. What was your wife doing at this time? Was she working full time on SocoGlam, or was she still in industry, or how was she approaching this?
Oh yeah, she was all in. I mean, wow. She quit her job back in Korea, so even before when we came to New York. And so, yeah, again, it started as a passion project, and like a lot of that passion is all Charlotte, you know. So she has a lot to do with the success of the company for sure.
And you know, another thing I would love to learn about is, again, if you were to rewind 4 years ago when you first started SocoGlam, what do you wish you knew at the time about entrepreneurship or starting your own company?
Oh man, I wish I knew so much. You know, I think any entrepreneur will say, and you know, I'm sure you feel the same way. I mean, you just learn so much going through it the first time that if you had to do it a second time, like it can just be, if you just knew the things, you'd go so much faster. You just like, you know how to make this, like, you know, decisions would be a lot easier and so forth. So yeah, there's just so much. But I mean, like, if I had to just, like, I guess pick one thing for now, it probably would be being more aggressive on the networking end. You know, this is something that I think, like, you kind of know about the military because, you know, you hear things like the good old boy system, or like, you know, it's all about who you know. And, you know, you do build relationships because it's all about people in the military. But looking at it from the lens of like business, I think was something that was a miss for me in the beginning. Like, I just kind of took it for granted. Like, I'd like to consider myself a pretty easygoing guy, but to really aggressively go out there, I think, you know, I think it would have helped a lot more. So I think, like, just knowing what I know now, you know, SocoGlam is a great business. We got a great business model. I think we have an amazing team, and there are people out there who would love to, you know, invest or join the team. But, you know, if they never heard of you, or if they never interacted with you or don't even know who you are, then you're not going to get those opportunities. And, you know, I always see that people that really do get to know us, they really just like, they just love it and want to be a part of it somehow. So for me, it's about just like going out there and meeting more people. And yeah, I really realize that now. And so I just wish I would have been able to focus on that a little bit earlier.
That's great. And I echo what you're saying too. It's I remember the first and second time I was raising money for Storybox, there was a lot of feedback around first-time entrepreneurs and a lot of hesitancy. And at the time, I was very bitter about that. And I think with some reason. But in retrospect now, I realize, you know, my investors, I learned a lot on their dime. I made so many mistakes that I hope not to make again. But I can see why. You know, I can see why after you've been around the block a little bit, you learn and you start to get. It almost feels like it's just as much self knowledge as it is business knowledge. But you start to learn your own strengths and weaknesses and how to play things. And so, but I echo what you're saying. It's like, you know, were I to go back in time, I would do so much differently.
Totally.
And you mentioned at the very start of the interview just about that you've received a lot of great advice when you were going through your own transition. And I'm wondering, what was some of that quality advice that people gave you that you would want to share with listeners?
You know, I think this is actually, this is a big part of who I am. So this kind of thing started even when I was in high school. You know, I wanted to go to West Point ever since I was a sophomore in high school. And I never, I worked my tail off. You know, I was senior class president, and I was doing all this stuff like everybody else that would try to get into West Point. And I didn't get in the first year. And that was a really hard moment for me. I think, you know, if you think about high school, everybody goes to college. And like, for me, I got into these other great schools, but I was really focused on West Point. I wanted to serve my country, and that was my goal. And I decided to go to prep school, which means like I just basically give up that year to go to prep school and then focus on going at it again. And I think that there was a lot of shame, and especially growing up in an Asian household where, you know, you're there for Thanksgiving. That's usually the first time everybody comes home for the holidays, and, you know, everybody's like, oh, how do you love, you know, X school, Y school? And, you know, parents are like, oh, I'm so proud my kid is coming back home from X school or Y school. And for me, I was like, oh, I wasn't going to school. I was going to prep school. And so there was that. And then, you know, some people don't know this, but I'm happy to share. Like, I didn't get into Columbia Business School the first time around, you know. And I think, you know, I think the advice that I had every step of the way, even when I was in the military, I think there were certain assignments that I didn't get, you know, and certain things. And you know, I had great mentors all along the way that basically said, don't give up, you know. And I think what I've built, and which is a big part of who I am, is just resiliency. Having the ability to just really get back up. And, you know, especially if you're a vet, You've definitely had your low times. I mean, everybody's had that time. And, you know, I think what's important is to know that when you're in the real world, or you're going to B school, or you're going to work somewhere, or especially if you're working in a startup, you're gonna get punched in the gut, you know, not literally, well, maybe not literally, but like figuratively, you're gonna get the wind knocked out of you a bunch of times. And I think it's important to just stay resilient, like don't give up. That's been like something that a lot of like people that have like are really close to me who see me struggle through the years, like have, you know, that's what they've said continuously. And I think like, it's so important to just to hear that, because you know it, but when you hear it from somebody that really cares about you and is looking out for you, I think that really gets you over that hump and you just come back so much stronger. So that would be my one thing of advice.
Oh man, I really appreciate your candor on that. And, you know, I'm thinking, I'll try and find the link and put it in the show notes, but I'm just thinking of a podcast I listened to recently where they were at this conference for YouTube celebrities, you know, these people who are making tens of thousands of dollars off of YouTube videos. And they did like the 10 most popular YouTube stars. And everyone was up on stage sharing their advice about why they were successful. And the guy that the podcast focused on, he got up on the stage and he held up a lottery ticket and he's like, here's the lottery ticket I just won. And the reason I won is because when I scratched, I was going side to side and I used a dime and not a penny. And he goes into all this stuff and he's like, hey guys, it's so much luck that caused me to be successful with this. And what made me successful was I bought a lot of lottery tickets. And I failed, and I kept coming back, and I kept coming back, and I kept coming back, and eventually I won. But the only thing that made the difference was my ability to get knocked on my butt and get back up and go back out there. And what I love about your background is, you know, you had that experience in high school, you had that experience in grad school, and you kept on going back. And I just feel like that is such a critical differentiator for everything, but especially for entrepreneurship. And I love that you pointed to the psychological component, which I relate to as well, of like you're talking about your parents, friends, and what they think of you. And I've had that experience so many times with a startup of you just feel so much shame, or you feel like, well, my company isn't Instagram, or no one understands what I'm doing, or it's not as secure. And there's so much of that. So I just could only imagine how much facing that early on built up that tenacity and that resilience that you're speaking to. And I can imagine how much that's helped you with Soko Glam and everything you do after this.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, again, you know, you're an entrepreneur and, you know, I think so many people out there, I think they all feel the same way. So I'm just really echoing what a lot of the people would say, but I just think that's so important. And so with anybody, not just veterans, I mean, you just, if you're gonna come into the startup space, I mean, just get ready, you know, and like just stay focused. And you know, a lot of people are gonna tell you that you can't do it. Yeah, I mean, you'll even tell yourself that you can't do it at times, but you just never give up.
That's awesome. And you also mentioned, you know, a little while ago about how you've been active in mentoring veterans. I'm wondering, what are some of the consistent misconceptions that you see veterans have, or the consistent mistakes that you see veterans make when they're approaching their civilian career?
So the reason why I keep harping on homework is because that's really what I see a lot of. You know, I think that, you know, the military, they do an okay job. Like, I think they're trying to do better at, like, you know, I think when it's like, I forgot what they actually call it. But when you're transitioning out, like, they make you go to all these, you know, formal classes.
They called it TAPS for us, Transition
Yes.
Assistance Program. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it right there. And so I think that, you know, they're doing an okay job there. But when you look around, I think like people are not taking it that seriously. And so what really needs to happen is you just got to do your homework. I mean, like, and I think a good starting point is to just talk to people, because a lot of times, you know, I think, you know, when I was talking to some of my soldiers who are considering, you know, leaving the service, and, you know, they were just asking, you know, hey, sir, what should I do? And I'm like, well, you got to kind of figure that out, man. You know, you got to like figure out what is it that you want to do. I mean, do you want to be an entrepreneur, or do you want to work for a Fortune 500 company? Like, do you want to be in operations? I mean, what are you passionate about? And, you know, that's a common mistake that I see, because people like I think they like, because the military kind of sets things up for you, right? You don't got to worry about healthcare. You don't got to worry about, you know, promotions is for like, you know, time and grade, like, you know, they're going to move your stuff for you. I mean, like, things are kind of like autopiloted when you're in the military in some ways. And so you really got to take your career into your own hands, I think, when you're making that transition. And I think it starts with digging deep inside, do some soul searching, figure out what you want to do, and then go out there and make it happen. Like, go out there and do your homework, meet those people. I mean, the good place to start is any kind of veteran network. There's so many great vet networks out there. I think your podcast series is an amazing resource. I mean, like, I think that you just got to go out there and just like get engaged, and don't expect like things to get set up for you. And so I think that's a common thread that I see. I mean, there's different like variabilities to that, but like that would just be like, you know, one that I would share.
That's great. And I definitely agree. And it seems like a theme that comes up a lot is how a lot of vets will get out and it's kind of like, I can do anything. I'm a Swiss Army knife. What, you know, you do the job for me. Tell me what I should do. And how that leads to just a lack of options. It's just people are too busy. They can't do the thinking for you. It's like you have to do the work to tell someone. Like, I remember one person gave a great example where they just had their 2-sentence elevator pitch. Like, hey, I just got out of the Army. I do this. I'm looking for a product management role at this size company. Do you know anyone? And then it's so easy because you just go in your Rolodex. You're like, oh, yes, that person. And whereas if someone comes to me and like, I can do anything, there's like, I can't do anything with that. And and because it comes up so frequently, I'm just wondering, does anything else come to mind in terms of how people can come from the military and increase that self-knowledge about whether they would like a Fortune 500 company or a startup? Like, any thoughts on how they might start to get a taste of which one they might prefer?
That's a good question. I mean, like, for Fortune 500 companies, I was never so focused on that. I would say, so I might not be the best resource, or this might not be the best response. So, I mean, for the listeners out there, just take it with a grain of salt. But, you know, I always believe, like, even in the military, it's like, you know, on the job training, right? So it's about kind of getting your hands dirty, like roll up your sleeves and actually go out there and do it. There's a lot of great internship programs. Like I said, I mentioned one where I wanted to find out what big tech was like. So I applied for this program that Google put on, and I was lucky enough to be a part of that. And that just really gave me, I mean, I could have done hours and hours of reading, you know, for weeks, but during that short period of time, I was able to get so much out of that experience. So I know Fortune 500 companies out there like GE and other ones, they have really great vet programs. And even if it's just like getting on the phone or meeting face to face with somebody that works there, usually it'll be other vets. I think that that'd be a great way to really understand what it'd be like a day in the life of a GE employee or another Fortune 500 company.
That's awesome. Another thing I'm always curious to learn about is, you know, there's so many positive habits that we take from the military that serve us well on the civilian side in the workplace. I'm wondering though, are there any habits that you had to break, habits that might have worked well or strategies that you used in the military that you had to unlearn or adapt away from as a civilian?
Oh man, I can go on this one. So I'm going to keep this one short. So, you know, I think to each their own in terms of what kind of military experience they had. But for me in particular, and I think a lot of people will resonate with this way. I mean, like military is very direct. I mean, you can be very terse in the way that you manage people by still being, you know, inspirational and all that. But like, you know, it's very much like, you know, hey, have you done this? Roger. I need you to go do this. Roger. Or like, you know, like you just like do this, do that. Roger, go ahead. Like you just like very efficient in terms of like just getting the mission done. I'm in the beauty space. And so like I think that, you know, you like it's like that book, I forgot the name of the title, but it's about like that emotional intelligence, right? Like you have to learn how to communicate effectively to get what you need. And, you know, communicating like you communicate in the military is not going to actually work in certain industries, actually most industries. And I think that, you know, you need to, like for me, I had to definitely, you know, I think tone down certain things in terms of like how to manage. You know, I managed a whole entire infantry company. But here, like, you know, I think that even just managing like 15 to 20 people, you know, it's a quite a different challenge. It's not like managing a platoon. I think that there's not as much structure in a startup. So I had to really kind of figure out, okay, let's take a step back, Dave. You know what works in the military. Take what you know, which is like, you know, you want to empower people, you want to basically not micromanage, you want to kind of like you know, give people reward people for what they're doing, give credit where credit's due. All these like, think about what are like the core tenets of management and leadership and communication, and then just kind of like put a different lens on top. So I think specifically what I had to do was like soften my approach. And Charlotte, you know, again, having the great co-founder that I have, was really able to kind of help and coach me in terms of, you know, this is how you should soften your approach. Hey, when you kind of said that the other day, like, you know, this is how you can probably work on that, you know. And so, you know, that was actually vital for me. You know, coming in, like you just can't like cut and paste, you know, your style right in. And so that was a big piece for me. I think like demilitarizing my approach or my language even, like there were even some small things where I was using like acronyms for the military, and like some of my team members would reply back and be like, what does like BLUF mean, like bottom line up front? I mean, like weird things. And so that took some time to kind of get out of my system, but yeah.
That's awesome. What about as you look back on that transition from military to civilian, were there any surprises, anything that you didn't expect or know to expect from when you were on active duty?
That's like a that's a good question. What did I not expect? There's probably a ton. I just probably drawing a blank. Well, I would say maybe one that like that comes to mind is, you know, I'm in New York City, so it's definitely you know, each city is very different. But you know, I thought I knew like is obviously a big thing for any company, and in the military we definitely are very diverse. You know, a lot of times I was one of the most one of the only Asians in the room and so forth, and I never really saw myself as an Asian, like in that sense where I'm like I'm the token Asian. But I think like here, like not everybody's wearing the same uniform, and so it's like you're on the same team and you see that diversity here. But I think like one thing that you know was came as a surprise to me was I felt like I was always really good with like different types of people. People come from different parts of the world, different walks of life. And what I realized is there's a whole another level to that, especially when the walks of life are really different. Because like I was taking my experience from the military where different walks of life kind of meant, oh, I'm from the East Coast and the West Coast, or I'm from Korea, or I'm from different parts of the world, all coming to one place to serve our country and being uniform, versus, you know, now in my startup, I mean, I have folks, you know, we have, you know, a very international team and people come from all over, but also, I mean, some of them came from the beauty space, obviously. Some of them came from like Condé Nast, so like, you know, publications. And so these are all places where, like, workplaces where I just wasn't very familiar. And so that was something that is pretty obvious, I think, if you just read about it. But in terms of living it, like I was like, wow, like there's a lot more to know about people than just where they're from.
Yeah, that's true. There's so much shared history, shared values, shared things within the military, and then that it just becomes exponential potential differences and just nuances and backgrounds. And one thing I always like to ask at the end is we've covered a lot about startups and about starting companies and co-founders and transitioning. But I'd love to just end with something more open-ended, which is anything that you haven't talked about. It could be about personal life or professional life that you would like the audience of active duty or veterans listening to hear. What would you like to share with them?
Well, I feel like we shared a lot, but I would say that if I just shared one thing, one that comes to mind would be find a battle buddy. Yeah, that's probably one. I think, you know, I think I talk about that a little bit with some other people, and I think that, you know, that can mean finding a co-founder, finding some kind of sounding board or mentor, just somebody you trust to hold you accountable. And I think that, you know, whatever path you choose as a transitioning veteran, whether it's Fortune 500 company, a startup, anywhere in between, you know, just like in the military, it's like, you know, it's, you gotta, you know, it's a team mentality, it's a team approach. And so even when you're starting out, you know, don't feel like you're in it alone. You know, there's tons of people out there who are willing to help, and finding that battle buddy, to somebody to just encourage you when you're down, telling you not to give up, you know, kind of giving you a different point of view, you know, being that person that's staying up late at night, you know, like burning the midnight oil, not doing things alone, is, I think, is actually a very powerful kind of psychological thing. And I think beyond, I mean, just there's obviously the physical nature of it, but I think that find a battle buddy, because, you know, nobody achieves success alone. I am living proof of that. You know, I've had to lean on other people. People advocated for me. People put themselves out for me, and like I had to, you know, seek out mentorship. And so, yeah, just find a battle buddy. That'd be like the last thing I would say.
That's great. Well, Dave, I appreciate all the advice. I know it's been encouraging for me to hear about your story and all the things that you've learned along the way. And I know our audience will benefit as well. So thank you for taking the time to speak with me.
No, thank you. This has been great. Thank you.
Surface.
Thanks for listening. Before you go, three important announcements. First, if you believe in what I'm doing and believe in supporting veterans in their careers, please, please, please help me spread the word. The best way I know to do that right now is by taking 18 seconds to write a review on iTunes. It would mean a lot. Second, based on my interviews, I'd advise any and all veterans to look at servicetoschool.org and the American Corporate Partners. Both are completely free for veterans and give you a lot of great resources for your education or professional life, respectively. Third, there are a ton of other great interviews, resources, and data at beyondtheuniform.io. Check it out, share it with your friends, and drop me a line if you have any feedback, because I'd love to hear from you. Thanks, and see you on the next interview.